Welcome to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Recently, the state released its survey of uninsured people in Vermont. 4,000 households covering roughly 10,000 individuals were contacted by phone. The survey shows that the number of uninsured Vermonters has fallen dramatically over the past 2 years. In 2012, roughly 6.8% of adults in Vermont did not have coverage. In 2014, that number has dropped to 3.7%. The expansion of Medicaid, which is part of the Affordable Care Act, is listed as a major reason why more Vermonters have health care coverage. But the cost of health care continues to be a barrier for people seeking coverage. Governor Peter Shumlin says it's an issue that must be addressed.
Cost is the barrier for the roughly 23,000 Vermonters who still don't have insurance. The majority of them will tell you, why don't you? They'll say cost. But we also know that the high cost of health care, even with those that are insured, deductibles, having to pay a lot out of pocket, continues to inhibit folks from getting the care that the primary care, the preventative care that they deserve.
So what are the challenges that the state faces to make certain that all Vermonters have health care coverage? And what's the best use of state resources to try to keep health care costs from increasing in the future? These are some of the questions we have today for our guests, Robin Lunge, who is the Director of Healthcare Reform in the Shumlin administration, and also Peter Sterling of the Vermont Campaign for Healthcare Security. Great to have you both here.
Thanks.
Thank you.
And you can join the conversation here at Vermont Edition. You can give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. Your thoughts about this uninsured survey, the number of uninsured Vermonters dropping, almost cut in half. What are the steps that should be taken to try to make this number even lower in the future? 1-800-639-2211. You can send us an email at vermontedition@vpr.net or give us a call, 1-800-639-2211. So, Robin, the expansion of Medicaid has been cited as one of the biggest factors here. Is that because the eligibility of Medicaid has been expanded?
Yes. So the Affordable Care Act increased the income levels under which people can now have coverage through Medicaid from about the poverty level up to not quite 140% of the poverty level. So that has meant that more Vermonters are able to come in to that program, which does not have a premium.
And to put those levels in perspective, I looked up the new 2015 federal poverty levels. 100% of poverty is about $11,600. So if you went up to close to 140%, 138% of federal poverty levels, you'd be looking at an income of roughly $16,000. Do I have that right?
Yes. So even at that higher expanded level, we're still talking about folks who have pretty low wages and low income.
Now, at the same time, the state also provides subsidies to folks who are getting their health insurance on the exchange above this 138% of poverty. But just before the thought is, for those folks who are on expanded Medicaid, they really don't have deductibles or co-payments, do they?
Not much. So there are some co-payments in Medicaid, particularly for prescription drugs and some other services, including, for example, non-emergency, emergency room use, things like that. But there's no premium and there's no deductible. And the co-payments are required by the federal law to be quite modest, recognizing that these households have very little income.
So folks who have incomes above this level are eligible for some state subsidies for the policies that they buy on the exchange?
Yes. So under the Affordable Care Act, Vermonters with incomes up to around, let me just make sure I get that number right, about 46, 47,000 for a single person are able to get some financial help in buying a private insurance product. In addition, for those who have incomes below about 30,000, they're eligible for some help with their deductibles and copayments as well.
So the survey also showed that Vermont is number one in the country for insuring children. Is that Dr. Dinosaur?
Yes. So because Vermont has been working quite a long time on insuring kids, we've made a lot of progress. In particular, what we can say is that we've seen a decrease in uninsured kids from about 6,200 kids in 2000. That actually went up in 2005 to almost 7,000. But now we've come down to just under 1,300 kids. So that's a very good success in terms of ensuring that all our kids can see a doctor when they need to.
Peter, you've been involved in this issue for some time. We just heard the good news. The uninsured rate dropped from 6.8% down to 3.7%. Vermont's number one in the country when it comes to insuring kids. But is the cost of health care still a major problem?
Right. Every year in these surveys, the state does ask people, why are you uninsured? And cost is always the main reason. I mean, as Robin said, you know, people who are at these low incomes, they don't have a lot of extra money kicking around. I mean, there was a fairly amazing survey done nationwide. Half of this country does not have access to $2,000 through savings, through a friend, family, anything like that. So when you're talking about someone who's making 15, 20 grand a year, there usually isn't a lot of money left over to pay for healthcare bills. So the choice is go uninsured because you know what? You have to fix the car to go to work. You have to put gas in the car to get to work. You have to pay for childcare. Healthcare becomes a luxury at these low incomes. One of the reasons Dr. Dinosaur is so successful, Medicaid is so successful, is because it has next to no premiums. It doesn't ask people to pay up front for their healthcare much. We see the uninsured rate climb as we go higher up in these middle incomes, 15, 20, 30, 40 grand a year. It's because the premiums go up a lot and people don't have $200 a month lying around when you're making 28 grand a year.
Another interesting part of the survey, Peter, was that a large percentage of uninsured adults are working, and a lot of them are working full time.
That was the number one thing that jumped out to me in this survey, other than the great things about having our uninsured rate go down. The fact that really the vast majority of uninsured Vermonters are working full time. You know, think of them in a service sector job, waitress, waiter, low wage retail. Maybe they're working in hotels. And, you know, low income people aren't lazy. They're trying as hard as they can, but the cost of healthcare is just not affordable to them. I thought this number jumped out at me. 124,000 people said there were times that they had problems paying for medical bills in their household. 94,000 Vermonters in this survey said they have been contacted by a collection agency because of unpaid medical bills. So clearly, it's not just about whether you have insurance or don't have insurance. It's a question of if you have insurance, can you actually afford to see the doctor? And that's where we need to go farther in Vermont.
And we were talking earlier, Peter, that about half of all uninsured people in Vermont make less than 200% of the poverty level. So even with the federal and the state subsidies that are available on the exchange, and this would be for the people who don't qualify for expanded Medicaid but have incomes, let's say, up to 200% of poverty, do we take away from this that even with those subsidies, it's still not affordable?
That's right. So even after the governor's proposal yesterday to increase the subsidies in the exchange, if you're talking about someone who's making $30,000 a year, they're going to pay somewhere close to $2,000 a year in premiums and up to about $2,500 in out-of-pocket costs before insurance pays for all their bills. That's about $5,000 out of a $30,000 gross income. That's a lot of money for someone who's still got to pay rent, pay utilities, pay to keep their car going. And we have to go farther. I mean, still, these out-of-pocket costs are not nearly as affordable as they were under Catamount Health, which was made illegal under the Affordable Care Act.
Let's go to our callers and start off with Scott, who's calling from Pomfret. Hi, Scott. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. Thank you. My question is for Director Lunge. With the governor's proposal yesterday about the 0.7% payroll tax to fill the gap, this cost shift gap, I'm wondering if the state would also contemplate at the same time requiring better claims information so that we can more accurately know what the true cost shift is. And just to give reference, I read an August 2014 report about price variances and that the state has a difficult time obtaining good information to really understand what the price variances are between hospitals. And so I think we would serve ourselves better if we just simply had better information. And if we could join that with the payroll tax, maybe that would be a good idea. I'd like to get your comments.
Scott, thanks for your phone call. The governor yesterday did propose a 0.7% payroll tax on all businesses to help pay for his healthcare initiatives. It would raise about $90 million on an annual basis, and then that would be matched by federal money, probably another $99 million. A lot of this is done to try to address the so-called cost shift, and this is how the governor described it.
Current Medicaid reimbursements drive up private insurance costs for businesses and individuals, acting as a hidden tax cost shift. This amounts to an astounding $150 million in private premium inflation in Vermont every single year.
Robin, it seems like everybody is talking about the cost shift all of a sudden. The cost shift has been there for years. Maybe not quite as dramatically as it is now, but it's been there. It's been a sizable number. Why this year? Why all of a sudden has the cost shift become such a hot issue?
So I think that as Vermont is coming out of the slow economy, one of the things we need to do in looking at our budget priorities is think about how to move forward in healthcare to ensure that we are making Vermonters and Vermont premium payers less subject to that cost shift. Because as you mentioned, the way this works is that when Medicaid doesn't pay its fair share, those costs get shifted onto private premium payers. And as we see these ongoing pressures in the private premium sector, we need to really focus on how to ensure that we're paying our fair share as a state.
So if we look at this, if Medicaid reimburses at somewhere between 40 and 60% of the cost of the service, and if Medicare is 80 or 85%, what you're saying is somebody's got to make up the difference.
Absolutely.
And guess who it is? It's the people who have private health insurance.
Yes. So we need to move forward in making the system more fair. And as the caller referred to, the Green Mountain Care Board has been spending a lot of research time looking at how prices vary from hospital to hospital and provider to provider in order to think about how we can ensure our payment system is fairer when we look across different payers and different providers.
So the goal here of the governor is to raise the Medicaid reimbursement rate to such a level that the cost shift will be less, and therefore the pressure on private health insurance premiums will go down a little bit.
Correct. That's exactly right, Bob.
So I think what Scott was also thinking about was, can this be proven, and will it be proven in the future going forward for the, let's say, Blue Cross to say, here are our rates today, here's what it would have been if we didn't have higher reimbursement rates?
Yes. So the Green Mountain Care Board has regulatory authority over both hospitals and insurance premium rates. So we think that they've done a lot of improvements over the last few years to increase the data and information that they're collecting in those processes. What that means in plain English is basically that they can, through their process, pull this money out of the private premiums for the majority of premium payers. Now, for companies who insure themselves, so they're not buying an insurance product, I think the governor is committed to stand with those companies to ensure that they too can negotiate to ensure that they're seeing the benefit of the cost shift as well.
Peter, part of the governor's plan also would increase subsidies for low and moderate income Vermonters on the healthcare exchange, Vermont Health Connect. Do you think that will go some way towards making coverage more affordable for those folks who now find it unaffordable?
It's definitely a step in the right direction. One of the hats I wear is I'm a Vermont navigator, and I also employ several other navigators. And we meet people all the time who want to enroll, and then we start talking to them, and then they say, oh, I have to pay $150 a month for premiums. Then you tell them, well, you still have to pay about a couple grand with deductibles and other things to see the doctor. And they say, no way, I just don't have the money. It's not that I don't want to. I mean, even the survey found most people, the uninsured, did actually interact with Vermont Health Connect, then made the decision not to enroll, and that was probably because of cost. So anything we can do to lower the cost will get more people in. And most importantly, Bob, honestly, because this really is about people, it lets people go see the doctor when they're sick. And that's what we really want about this whole game, is about letting Vermonters see a doctor when they're sick before it becomes a crisis financially and health-wise.
Robin, another part of the governor's plan is to increase reimbursement payments for the Blueprint for Health. Why is that so important?
So the Blueprint for Health has been really a foundation for moving forward on moving away from the fee-for-service type of system we have today, where hospitals and doctors' offices basically get paid piecemeal. So they do more services, they get paid more. We want to be able to change the way we pay them so that they can really focus on quality of care and health, and not so much on how many patients are they able to see in an hour. Increasing the blueprint payments allows additional capacity for both our primary care docs who have created medical homes to really take care of their patients beyond just medical care and connect them with social services and other services that they need, and also to really support what's called a community health team. Each of our regions has a community health team, which provides non-medical support for these medical homes. So, for example, they might be able to have a therapist embedded in their practice so that if somebody has a mental health need, and instead of just giving them 10 phone numbers to call, they can walk down the hall and see somebody.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to John in Burlington. Hey, John, welcome to the program.
Thank you for taking my call. I've been a physician and surgeon in Vermont for 35 years, and I've accepted every single type of insurance out there, Medicaid, Medicare, et cetera, all the commercial companies. Medicaid has reimbursed me at about 10% of what my normal fee is, and there's no option. I have to take it. Less is actually in New York State, where it's not even enough to cover the cost of materials. And I've done all of this as pretty much a service to the community. When it comes to this concept of cost shifting, I don't really understand. That is, I have a contract with Blue Cross Blue Shield, et cetera, and they say this is what we will pay you for this procedure code or what you do. I can charge 10 times as much, and I would see exactly the same amount. So how is it that I'm actually cost shifting? I certainly don't pass the cost on to anybody else.
Robin?
First of all, John, thank you so much for your practice and your support, and for your continued really priority to take all levels of insurance. That's really important and really heartening to hear. I think that the cost shift concept really, as you've mentioned, doesn't necessarily apply to small independent practices because they are what we refer to as price takers. They may not have the leverage with the insurance company to negotiate. But with larger entities, including some larger hospitals, they have some clout and they can actually do more negotiation for their prices. So I think you've made a very important point about some of our more independent practices and smaller folks who in the practice of medicine who may not be quite in that same position.
Is part of what Blue Cross is willing to reimburse John in any way related to the fact that he's taking certain Medicaid patients and receiving very little money for that?
No, not particularly, because Blue Cross would be looking across their book of business and negotiating for their customers what they're able to negotiate. But of course, from the hospital and other larger practices perspective, they need to make sure that they're getting enough reimbursement to pay their bills as well.
Today in the program, we're looking at the new uninsured survey, as well as some of Governor Peter Shumlin's healthcare initiatives that he unveiled yesterday. If you've got a question or a comment, give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. We're looking at the uninsured survey and the governor's healthcare initiatives. With us today, Robin Lunge, who is the director of healthcare reform in the Shumlin administration, and Peter Sterling of the Vermont Campaign for Healthcare Security. Your thoughts, 1-800-639-2211. Let's talk to Paula, who is calling from Enosburg Falls. Hi, Paula.
Hi there. I'm thinking it's this survey or a recent report said sort of had the shocking statistic that 60% of Vermonters are underinsured. They have insurance, but not enough, and they have the deductibles and copays that sort of keep them from being able to actually get health care. I'm thinking that both this and the cost shifting, which is a problem of healthcare in a private healthcare insurance system, both of those would be addressed and solved by a universal, publicly financed system. So is that what we should be continue to be moving towards to solve these problems?
Peter, what about the problem of the underinsured? We've been talking a lot about the uninsured and saying that we're very happy. It's good news that that rate's going down. But there are a lot of folks who are underinsured.
Right. And I'd say that's clearly the biggest problem we have today is too many Vermonters have to worry too much about paying a lot of money just to be able to go see the doctor. And we really have to do more than that. I believe we have a good idea on the table, which is to use a sugary beverage tax to bring in about $30 million that would help subsidize people in the exchange, allow them to have deductibles, you know, back to where they were when we had Catamount, which is under $1,000. Because right now, if you're on the exchange and you're making between $30,000 and $45,000, you could very easily spend 25% of your income on healthcare bills. And that's way out of line. We should not be asking Vermonters to take a quarter of their income to go toward healthcare bills.
So I think yesterday in his budget address, the governor was talking about increasing the state subsidies for folks on the exchange from $2 million to $4 million. You're saying, hey, wait a minute, how about $30 million?
I'm saying I'm not putting a price tag on it because I'm not an actuary, but I know we need to spend a lot more than we're currently spending just to bring those, you know, middle-income Vermonters, people making between $20,000 and $45,000, back up to the level they had before the exchange when we had that, when we gave them access to Catamount with its very nice $500 deductible and good preventative care. It let people see a doctor when they needed to without worrying about the cost.
Go back to our callers and talk to Andrea in Hyde Park. Hey, Andrea, what's on your mind today?
Well, I'm wondering, I really think that there is a serious gap still in coverage because it's great that there's coverage for lower income people, but what about people that make over $45,000 that aren't eligible for any subsidy? So I have my own business and I was just over the limit. And for myself and my daughter, I'm a single mom, I would have had to pay $900 a month for health care. That's totally impossible on my budget. So I don't see how now I have to get insurance, but I can't even afford to buy the insurance. How does that work?
Peter?
I couldn't agree more. You know, as a navigator, we hear from people like you all the time, people who make just over the income limit to get subsidies. As a matter of fact, according to this survey, one of the biggest jumps in the uninsured we saw are people over that income limit, just over 400% of the poverty level where the government subsidies end. And it's something I think we as a state need to address. If you're making 40, 50, 60 grand and you're in the exchange and you got to pay $5,000 a year in premiums, maybe another $10,000 for your family out-of-pocket limit, that's way too much. We got to bring the cost of that down.
And Robin, is part of this problem is that basically there's an income cliff here?
Yeah, the ACA sets up an income cliff at this income level that we talked about earlier, about $46,000, $47,000 for a single person, where after that you get nothing. And so that is an unfortunate design of how the federal law was created. And certainly I think what we do know from the survey is that we still have 3.7% of Vermonters who don't have insurance, and they do span all income levels. And we do know that over some of those income levels that folks are hurting. The cost shift proposals actually should also help them because to the extent that we're underfunding Medicaid and that increases pressure on private premiums, the cost shift proposals will help lessen that pressure for everyone, regardless of whether they're self-employed and buying as an individual or family versus an employer's plan.
Let's talk to Bill in Montpelier. Hey, Bill, welcome to the program.
Hey, hi, Bob. My question just has to do with the cost shift. And let's say there is a 0.7% tax. What is the mechanism to sort of verify that this amount is being, I'm going to just use a word, is being rebated or shifted back or being deducted from premiums? I ask you because part of the rationale in the Affordable Care Act was that the people who were uninsured were raising premiums for those who were buying insurance. And then once everybody was insured, premiums would be lower. That hasn't been the case. In fact, they've accelerated, as some of your other callers have indicated. So what I'm curious about is if we all agree to pay 0.7% payroll tax, how do we know we're going to get a deduction of 15 or 20% off our premiums, which was sort of the estimate that this Medicaid reimbursement rate raises our premiums right now.
Robin?
Sure. Thanks for calling, Bill. And that's a great question. So we know that we can track it through the Green Mountain Care Board process. So on the Green Mountain Care Board's website, they have an annual report, which they just posted, where they every year they calculate the amount of the cost shift from Medicaid, from Medicare, from free care and bad debt. So those statistics are annually compiled and they have in the past been able to, when Medicaid rates go up, ensure that they come out of the hospital budgets and the premium rates. So that process allows us some certainty that we can pull it back out of premiums. And just one thing to note, the estimate that we have for this investment is actually not 15 to 20%, it's 5%. So I don't want people to have a misinterpretation or misimpression about what that's going to look like.
5% for the governor's proposal.
Correct.
But if you looked at the cost shift, if you could take steps right now to eliminate the cost shift for Medicaid and Medicare altogether, it would be closer to 15%.
I don't have that figure in my head, but I am happy to get it back to you with it, Bob.
Okay. Let's talk to Bob in Moncton. Hi, Bob. What's on your mind today?
Hi. I run a small business here, and I provide health care for myself and some of my employees. I saw a 10% increase in our premium this year with Blue Cross, Blue Shield on the Silver Plan. And it just seems like, you know, presenting a new tax on employers, one, I'm doubtful I'm going to see any significant premium decrease next year or the year after or in the future, just based on, you know, my increases over the last 10 years in my premiums. I'm just highly doubtful that this plan's going to work. And secondly, it seems like you'd want to incentivize employers that provide a decent wage and health care for their employees to continue what they're doing. By taxing them again, it just seems like you're going the wrong route. You know, I don't know. It seems like the wrong way to do it. It seems like I'm going to pay a pretty hefty tax on my payroll this year. I'm not going to see much of a result in my premiums. And, you know, we're kind of left paying for everybody else. I don't know. So,
Bob, let me ask you a question as an employer. If, in fact, you saw a reduction in your health care premiums, assuming that that happened, would that be a fair trade-off to this new surcharge on the payroll tax?
From a business standpoint, it wouldn't, you know, because the increase on my payroll tax is going to be so much greater than the decrease in the premiums. I have only a few employees. We have 7 employees. I'm probably provide insurance for 2 or 3 at any given time. So, you know, a 5% decrease in the premium is not going to come anywhere near to the increase I'm going to see in that tax. Plus, I was thinking of John, the doctor who called in earlier. He's not going to see any, you know, benefit from the cost shift on his side from his Medicare reimbursement, but he's going to have to pick up the payroll tax. So it just seems to, transfer the pain around instead of really fixing a problem, you know.
Peter, what about Bob's concerns?
Right. It's very valid. But, you know, one of the things the Affordable Care Act does, Bob, both Bobs, is it provides incentives for employers to drop insurance and basically divorce whether or where you work from getting health insurance. So we are moving toward a future. We are right now moving toward a place where employers will not really be responsible or mandated to offer insurance. And I think as we get toward an environment where less and less employers are offering insurance, people like Bob will let their people go in the exchange. Most of them will get subsidies, hopefully generous ones. And Bob will be relieved of the burden of offering health insurance and let him go back to doing his work and not having to worry about dealing with Blue Cross all the time. And if there's other ways he can compensate his employees, but that's really why the governor's payroll tax kind of makes sense from a broad policy perspective, because the Affordable Care Act is pushing this whole country toward divorcing whether and where you work from getting health care.
What happens to Bob's employees who make just too much money? They're just above that subsidy level, and now they're stuck with paying the full cost of health care. What do they do?
Well, we in Vermont can enact a policy that would increase the subsidy level, as you referred to, not have a cliff at that 400%, that $47,000 a year income level, not make a cliff, make it more of a slope. So gradually increase the subsidies so more and more Vermonters can get affordable health care. And that would really ease the pain for Bob's employees and other employees while at the same time letting us move to our rational system of paying for health care.
Let's talk to Earl, who's calling from Barry. Hi, Earl. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Yes, thank you very much. I'm a pastor here at the Church of the Good Shepherd Episcopal here in Barry, and I've spoken with both Mr. Sterling and Ms. Lunge about an issue that they mentioned towards the beginning of the show. That, you know, it's so good. The good news is, of course, that, you know, more people are insured, but we find, and myself and a lot of pastors here in central Vermont, those Medicaid copays are just so burdensome for the lowest income individuals we have. You know, I find people who, you know, they've got, 5-10 different prescriptions, and, you know, by the time they come up with copays, then they're really looking at the choice between, am I going to eat or am I going to take my insulin? And so I think that really just shows, that we're moving in some good directions, but we really do need to move towards universal health care, where people don't have to make those kind of choices between either their medications for mental health they really need, or whether they're going to put food on the table. And so just wanted to make that's such an important point. I'm glad that they both brought that up and they're aware of it.
Thank you, Earl. This is Robin. Nice to talk with you again. I think we agree that we really need to address the affordability issues for Vermonters, and that is why the governor included in his budget a doubling of the money that could help folks with those copays and deductibles through Vermont Health Connect in particular. So we are hopeful that that will help with this issue around the underinsured.
No, Robin, the governor's proposal would also affect those businesses that currently do not offer insurance, and that would be more than half of Vermont businesses, which are quite small. So they may look at this and say, you know what, we can't afford this.
Yes, the payroll tax is hits a broad sector of the employer community in that it is fairer in terms of ensuring that both those businesses who are offering insurance to their employees and those who do not are contributing towards the reduction in the cost shift. As we know from business, you know, there are multiple reasons why employers offer and don't offer insurance. And some of those that do offer, they may feel that it's unfair that their competitor has an advantage by not offering. So when we looked at various options, we felt like this particular option was fair and that it would certainly help us reduce the pressure on private premiums, which is obviously a huge problem.
Let's talk to Nancy in Warren. Hi, Nancy. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm calling because I wanted to talk about something that was happening with me this year and that I'm faced with having surgery on my hands, both hands. And I want to, it's the only consumer purchasing item that you can't do a comparison. I called one hospital to talk about that option, and they almost really laughed out loud. I live centrally, about an hour to each hospital, and I'd like to know whether which hospital I should go to for the best price. There's no shopping comparison, and I'd sure like to be able to do that.
You know, Robin, a lot of people are expressing concerns about this and that, depending on if you have health insurance, there's so many factors. You'd think that two people going in to get the same procedure would pay the same price, but that sure is not the case.
That is definitely not the case. It's a lot more like an airplane seat. It depends on when you buy and where you buy and who you buy from. And as you've pointed out and as Nancy has mentioned, this information is very difficult to compile and to get because, of course, everybody's individual procedure is a little bit different. So there's both challenges from that perspective as well as challenges, as you alluded to, Bob, that depending on who's paying, the actual prices are different. And so part of what we want to try and do with the cost shift proposal is to add a fairer way to move forward with getting to a place where we might be able to have a better sense of a a cost for a procedure, which would help folks who are trying to do this comparison shopping. But I'm sympathetic to Nancy, not just because of her medical issue, but also the frustration she must be feeling from doing that. If depending on her insurer, some insurers do have some tools on their websites to do that comparison shopping. So, for example, I know both Blue Cross and MVP have those, so I would encourage her to contact her insurer to try and get that information.
And I think this is a top priority of the Green Mountain Care Board as well, but it's going to take a year or two. But their chairman, Al Gobay, has said he hopes to have a link on his website where you could see this information. We're certainly going to be following many aspects of this healthcare debate this year as the legislative session unfolds. Many thanks to our guest today, Robin Lunge, who's Director of Healthcare Reform in the Shumlin administration, and Peter Sterling of the Vermont Campaign for Healthcare Security. Many thanks for being on the program today.
Pleasure as always.
As always.
Coming up next, I'll talk with VPR's Pete Hirschfeld about some of the governor's key budget recommendations. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Well, as we mentioned earlier in the program, Governor Peter Shumlin unveiled a plan yesterday to impose a 0.7% payroll tax on all businesses on an annual basis. This would raise around $90 million. It would be matched by $99 million in federal money. So the governor wants to put $190 million into a new special health care fund to pay for a number of his initiatives. With me now to take a closer look at this proposal is VPR's Pete Hirschfeld. Hey, Pete.
Hey, Bob.
So, you know, it was about a month ago the governor said, well, we're not doing single payer. It's going to hurt the economy of the state of Vermont. But now he has this new proposal. Is this his alternative at this time to try to make health care more accessible and more affordable?
I don't know that it's fair to call this a replacement proposal for single payer. But I do think that the governor believes he's found a unique and elegant solution to a severe and vexing problem, and that the solution that he's found is something that is within the realm of political possibility. The state's failure to pay the full costs of treating Medicaid patients has begun to erode the healthcare system in some really fundamental ways. And because the state isn't paying full freight for this Medicaid population, people who get their insurance through Blue Cross Blue Shield or MVP are seeing rates soar. There are two stats that really drive this problem home. Hospital budgets are going to go up 3.1% in 2015. But insurance premiums at Blue Cross are going to go up on average by 7.7%. It makes no sense, right? Unless you take into account this Medicaid cost shift. And the reality is that these paltry Medicaid reimbursement rates that the state pays to providers, they generally only cover about 60% of the actual cost of providing services, are the primary reason that insurance rate increases are going up at a much faster rate than actual healthcare costs.
So we talked about the governor wanting to put as much as $190 million starting in 2017 into this special healthcare trust fund. Do you think some lawmakers are going to look at this and say, well, this is the beginning of the payroll tax. You're going to start at 0.7%. And guess what? 2 years from now, it's going to be 1%. Are you hearing some skepticism about that?
Absolutely. And not just among the traditional Republican opponents of something like this. We're not just talking about a tax increase here. We're talking about a new tax. And there are few things that scare lawmakers more than new taxes. Because as you mentioned, anytime you have a new tax mechanism, you give desperate lawmakers another place to look the next time a difficult budget dilemma comes around. As we've seen in the past with gas taxes, taxes on health insurance claims, income taxes, sales taxes, rooms and meals taxes. The temptation to increase that rate, even just a couple tenths of 1%, can prove irresistible down the road when these budget problems present themselves, no matter what legislators who are in the building today intend to happen then.
So what you're saying is right now this money might be used for healthcare initiatives. 2 years from now, new legislature, they could make a different decision.
Necessity is the mother of invention, and the temptation to change the universe of things that this money is available for is something that lawmakers might be inclined to do the next time they have a difficult fiscal problem to solve.
Now, it does impose this 0.7% payroll tax on all businesses. You've had a chance to talk to some folks in the business community. Do they buy the idea? Now, let's start off with the companies that currently offer insurance. Do they buy the idea that, yes, I'm going to pay this payroll tax, but at the same time, my health care costs are going to be reduced?
We're less than 24 hours out from this proposal, and businesses of all types are still trying to wrap their brains around the mechanics of what the governor has outlined. If you're a business that provides health insurance now, you're intrigued. You're saying, well, the governor is assuring us that we're going to see a dollar-for-dollar decrease in private insurance rates for every dollar that we put into to increase Medicaid reimbursement rates. But you want to see precisely how that's going to work, and you want to see a presentation that's going to convince you beyond a shadow of a doubt that that is indeed going to be the effect of this proposal. If you're a business that does not provide health insurance right now, then you're pretty concerned. You're looking at what is going to be just a net increase in your cost of doing business. For a lot of these businesses, the margins are not too high, and adding close to a percent of payroll to the cost of doing business, to hear some of the trade groups talk, they feel like this could really be a deal breaker for a lot of these folks.
So it sounds like for this plan to succeed, the health insurance companies are really going to have to demonstrate quite concretely that their rates are going to be lower because the state is putting so much more money into the reimbursement rate from Medicaid. They're going to have to really demonstrate this.
They are, and they are prepared to do so. The day before the governor gave his speech, the administration began circulating an op-ed from Don George, who is the CEO at Blue Cross Blue Shield. And Don George said in no uncertain terms that the reason that you're seeing private health insurance rates for businesses, for individuals, go up at the rate that you're seeing is primarily because of this Medicaid cost shift. He says if we can begin to increase the amount of money that the state is paying toward Medicaid patients, then we can promise that you will see a resulting decrease in the amount of money that we have to ask our customers to pay to cover private insurance.
And is that something that the Green Mountain Care Board would look at? I mean, they're the group that approves rate increases for the health insurance companies. Do you see them saying, well, here are the figures. We can see how much money the reimbursement has added. Therefore, the decrease in the health insurance premium should be something that's corresponding to that?
In this proposal, Peter Shumlin has a very willing partner in Al Gobay, who is the chair of that Green Mountain Care Board. Al Gobay and the four other members of that panel have all the policy levers they need access to in order to bring about the kind of changes that Peter Shumlin says would result from this. So look to see Al Gobay going before legislators in the very near future to say that the pitch that Peter Shumlin is making is something that he can deliver on.
Now, part of this money is going to be used to pay for the expansion of Medicaid, about 20,000 new people coming into the Medicaid program. If for some reason the governor's plan is not adopted, how does the state pay for these 20,000 additional people?
Well, it will not, plain and simple. If the state doesn't have the revenue to cover the increased cost of this Medicaid population, then that is a cost that is going to shift onto the private insurance population. And you're going to see the same phenomenon you see now, except it's going to be perceptibly worse because now we've got tens of thousands of new people coming onto the rolls. The question is, does government raise the money that it needs to pay for these folks, or does it leave the bill to people that are paying for healthcare through the commercial insurance system? There's another way to solve this, I suppose, and that would be to free up $90 million elsewhere in state government and then use that money to do – to Medicaid what Peter Shumlin proposes using this payroll tax revenue to do. Now, you would have to, of course, end whatever programs and services that money pays for now, but it would be a way to solve this problem without resorting to a new tax.
we're almost out of time. Are you hearing that possibility at the State House?
You'll hear Republicans talking about the fact that government has grown beyond taxpayers' capacity to support it. However, when it comes time to show exactly where you're going to find $90 million in cuts in state government, that becomes a much more difficult task.
We'll certainly be following this issue at the State House. VPR's Pete Hirschfeld, many thanks for being on the program
today. Great to be here, Bob.
That is our program for today. A Monday on Vermont Edition, we'll take a close look at the details of the new Vermont marijuana study that's just been released by the RAND Corporation. Vermont Edition is produced by Patty Daniels, Rick Sengary, and Sage Van Wing. And we want to wish Sage the very best as she leaves VPR for new opportunities on the West Coast. She's been a key part of our production staff for several years, and we're really going to miss her. We also have production assistance from Devin Karambelis. Mary Williams directed the program. Our executive producer is John Van Hoosen. I'm Bob Kinzel. Have a great weekend.